Hello, everyone, and welcome to the, I want to say, 13th episode of the second season of Talkboard. I'm here with none other than Luco Tedesco himself.
Hey, everyone.
We're gonna talk about a variety of things today. We're gonna get right into it, and we're gonna go. Luco, would you like to tell us a bit about who you are and what you do?
Okay, so I'm a security researcher, I guess. I've been around the jailbreak scene for quite a while now. I think up until iOS 8, I was mostly a user and tweak developer. Mm-hmm. And from iOS 8.4 onwards, I started looking more into the security research aspects of jailbreaking. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I've released a bunch of jailbreaks. I'm actively working behind the scenes, I guess, on quite a few things. I guess Checkrain is the biggest one right now, but I do a bunch of other work in iOS security that isn't directly related to jailbreaks, but, you know, still research vulnerabilities for LPE, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. What would you say was your first sort of big breakthrough in terms of security research?
I have a defining moment. In my mind, I have a defining moment, and that's when OS unserialized binary happened, and that was the vulnerability that was used in the Pegasus chain of bugs around iOS 9.3, I want to say. Mm-hmm. It was actually quite a fun bug. It was a use after free in the XNU kernel, and I think it was the vulnerability that got me really thinking, hey, this is actually doable, and there's a lot more degrees of freedom available to an attacker than they previously thought would okay. be there. Yeah, that would be it.
Okay, sweet. What do you do anything, any jobs outside of security research?
I mean, I used to code a lot of tweaks, I guess, a bunch of apps, mm-hmm. but most of the stuff I do nowadays is either for security research or for maybe, I guess, short tasks I need to automate or stuff like that. I don't do any app development other than exploit-related app development.
Okay. How did you manage to sort of pull the Checkrain team together? Did you have a list of people in mind, or was it sort of a touch-and-go kind of thing?
It really depends on a person-by-person basis, I guess. Like, I've had a bunch of people that I've always wanted to work with, and mm-hmm. I reached out to them myself personally, and then there were a bunch of people that reached out to me, and I realized, hey, they'd be a great they'd be a great addition to the team. Why not get them in, you know? Okay. And we discussed with the team, and we actually have quite a few people in our team at this mm-hmm. point. I think like more than 20.
Okay. Yeah, sweet. Is there anyone on the Checkrain team where sort of initially you weren't too sure, but like as they kind of started doing more things, you were like, this turned out to be a great choice?
I mean, a bunch of people actually, but honestly, out of all the people we had in our team, we never really had an issue with anyone. Like I'm really happy about how that turned out being. I'd rather not, you know, specifically mention the cases, but because it's irrelevant drama from the
moment. Yeah, I mean, not in terms of like issues. I mean, in terms of like you didn't really know the person and their abilities.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, quite a few people I either didn't know or I knew, but we had only like chatted maybe once. Like there wasn't really a deep knowledge of each other, but usually someone else would vouch. So there would always be like someone vouching for people that we're bringing into the team. So I guess directly, yeah, quite a few actually, I guess.
Okay. Right. For Yalu, talk to me a bit more about how Yalu came to be.
So Yalu was actually initially the name of my iOS 8.4.1 jailbreak. Mm-hmm. And it was actually just a joke, I guess, given that our crew, I guess, is called Kim Jong Cracks. I decided, hey, like I'm writing this jailbreak, and I use some stuff that was previously used in Pango jailbreaks. I looked a lot at the Pango jailbreaks as a starting point personally, and I was like, hey, we're North Korea, so we're collaborating with China. What's between China and North Korea, and that's the Yalu River. So that was the origin of the name, I guess. And it was really, I was really panicky because of KBP, actually. Because in iOS 9, we figured out Apple added some security measures that would detect kernel patches. So I realized, hey, iOS 8.4.1 is the only version that's currently out that doesn't have KBP and isn't jailbroken. So I better do that one jailbreak because it's going to be the last one. And I mean, it didn't really work out that way, but...
Because there was like no device that EOL'd on iOS 8, except for like technically the Apple TV 3, right?
And iOS 9, I mean, it looked tough. KBP really painted a bad picture on the viability of the jailbreak scene, in my opinion. But we managed to overcome it and come out of that stronger.
Okay, sweet. So what was the sort of reasoning for like basically stepping away after Yalu?
I mean, honestly, there were a multitude of reasons. In part, it was the jailbreak scene. In part, it was I was starting to work more and more professionally. So it's honestly hard to keep up with the scene and also keep up with work at the same time, especially because work and the scene are pretty much the same thing. Like, my work is virtually indistinguishable from doing jailbreak development. So there's just too many conflicts of interest. Too much drama, also too much attention that is maybe not worthwhile. Like, it's not the kind of attention from the kind of people that I guess in the security research community would matter that much. And I prefer to develop my, you know, my person as someone who does security research rather than the guy that comes up with the latest jailbreak every now and then.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So, but then Checkmate happened, obviously. And for a Seprom bug, for a Securam bug, I had to, I had to put in some work. Like, it's,
it was like a once in a lifetime kind of thing.
I mean, the day I saw Axiom tweet that, like, I had just woken up. I checked Twitter. I see that tweet. I'm like, what the fuck did Axiom do now? And yeah, from that moment, I realized, hey, like, we actually have to build the jailbreak on top of this. So
yeah, because I think we all had kind of similar reactions, because that tweet was posted quite early and by like our time zone, and I remember kind of seeing it and I was like, I have the opportunity to like make something of this. And then like I just messaged, because I'd already done an episode with Sparky the week before, I messaged Sparky and I was like, do you and Sig maybe don't want to do like an episode on Checkmate? And like 3 hours later we were recording with Lalo as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was honestly, I had never thought I'd see such a day in the jailbreak community for the longest while. Like, I honestly thought iBoot wasn't worth the effort. I mean, sure, there was, like, the possibility of some stuff being there, but the likelihood of a vulnerability within Securam being present and being disclosed to the public, I consider that zero.
Okay. Is there anything that has come of either Checkrain or Pongo OS that you didn't expect but you think is like a really cool side effect of having that sort of access?
I mean, I guess just the SEP research we've been doing lately, Pongo turned out to be an absolute success as a platform upon which to build deeper attacks on the iPhone platform as a whole. Because, I mean, it was really easy to develop an exploit on top of it, given what features we had already built into it. So, I mean, definitely it was a far better tool for research than I thought it would be, and it had more application. The Seprom stuff is just absolutely wild as a vulnerability. I never thought that kind of bug could be reached, and being able to do that with Checkmate and being able to develop on top of that with Pongo OS, that was very surprising to be so smooth, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate Jamie Bishop for introducing Pongo.js?
I mean, you know, I honestly helped him out, so I can't really say I hate him. But I feel like, you know,
inflicting JavaScript on the kernel.
Yeah, if it weren't for the fact that deep down I've always wanted to do something this bad in the world, like, you know, it's like it's basically pure evil. And deep down, maybe I'm with it as far as it's JavaScript, as long as it's JavaScript and EL1. But it's very, very evil. Like, I am evil, so.
So looking towards the future, is there anything that you think can still be done with Pongo that maybe hasn't been touched yet?
I mean, actually, several things that we really want to do. One is Pongo V. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a virtualization layer built on top of Pongo that would allow you to boot multiple versions of iOS at the same time.
Oh, wow.
By doing some crazy shit. Like, it's honestly very hard to even know whether such a project will ever be done or if it's even viable. There's a few things which I'm not entirely sure are viable at decent performance, but it's possible, and we've actually looked into it. We've got XNE booting to quite a good point, actually. Mm-hmm. With Pongo running at the same time, and by virtualizing the hardware, I think we should be able to have multiple instances of XNE at the same time as well.
Okay, sweet. I think that's kind of it for my question. Is there anything you wanna talk about?
I mean, I'm really hoping we can deliver, I guess, an A11 version of CheckRain that pones this up, as to not have the new Apple mitigations, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're working really hard on that. It was kind of sad. I was shocked actually when I heard that Apple added something that stops Checkmate, because I never thought they would be able to do something like that. But
yeah.
It also created a huge challenge, and it gave me a lot of motivation to figure out how to bypass it.
Yeah, it's real like real like nuclear war level stuff. Like everyone's like, they're not gonna go there, and then they go there, and then the other response was much worse.
The SEP stuff is definitely, I guess, the nuclear option. But at the technical level, we're attackers. That's what we're supposed to do. Like we have to respond, and in this case, I think the response maybe went too far. Like I would have personally never wanted to get to this point, but what else are you gonna do? Like,
yeah, popping SEP is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Let me pay the bills, and then we shall move on to community questions. So I would like to give a big shout out to today's sponsor, Laughing Qual. Laughing Qual has sponsored this episode of Talkboard, and for that, he is he would really appreciate if you would go and check out Quart on PackX. It is $2.49, and it's also available, I believe, if you are a silver level Patreon member. All right, now let's move on to community questions. Question from Alt F5. How old were you when you started security research?
I mean, as I have two moments, I guess. I've always tried to do security research, but at a point in time, I actually got into doing security research for real, I guess. And that was probably in 2014, which I was 17, I guess, 16 or 17. That's when I actually got started to actually doing security research stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just thinking about it.
Okay.
But the thinking part is equally as important, actually, I think. Like, a lot of the stuff I've done afterwards,
mm-hmm.
I was able to do it, like, in a serious manner, I guess, by having a background in having read a bunch of stuff, having thought about it for a long while.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I never actually did anything per se, mm-hmm. just having that background noise in my mind, like, it gave me a starting point, a framework.
Okay. Okay, question from Not Cult. What would you suggest to one who wants to get into security research?
The number one suggestion I always give to anyone is to look at open source exploits, because a lot of cutting edge techniques are actually open, And once you get the mentality around those techniques, like once you kind of figure out what the person that was developing the strategy was thinking about, you can develop your own strategies after that. And when you can develop your own strategies, you can effectively do security research.
Okay. Next question. Question from Mister, who actually, I believe this question holds kind of an important role in one of his current projects. Have you looked into the process of downgrading SEP OS? Would it be just as simple as setting a SEP nonce and then replaying valid blobs?
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Once you have SEP code execution, yeah.
Yeah. Mister is working on something called Inferius, which is to basically downgrade, it's custom firmware downgrading. Yeah. So it's a really, really useful tool. I know he's worked hard on it.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely very interesting. And those are things that I hope are like good things that I hope are going to come out of the SEP stuff. The ability to downgrade iOS fully rather than just downgrading the AP side and leaving SEP as is. I think that's going to be really interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Question from RA9. Will it be possible to set SEP nonce with Blackbird exploit to downgrade SEP/OS?
Fundamentally, I think so, yeah. I don't see why it wouldn't be possible, although you do need to have valid blobs. So you need to first cache a valid ticket, and then you should be able to replay the nonce. Okay. With Blackbird, although you do have to have a full Blackbird code execution exploit first. Like you need to have code execution first in order to change these SEP nonce, and it's not something that you can do alone with Blackbird. Okay. But what we're going to release will definitely have enough to actually pull it off, I think.
Question from Modest Sahat. How would the T2 exploit affect the repairability of Macs, for example, changing RAM or SSD?
That's something that we have not explored. I think from a fundamental level, this should let you do all of that. Okay. However, I'm not sure how, and I'm not sure if there's any deal breaker that I'm not aware of, but...
Okay.
Yeah, theoretically speaking, you should be able to change anything. You should be able to override the sysconfig, which is, I guess, where this sort of stuff would be stored. And I know some people are able to upgrade the storage on iPhones. Mm-hmm. So I guess if they're able to do it on iPhones, it's probably possible to do it on Macs as well, given this sort of low level access that we have now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question is from Graphiar. If it ever comes down to it, will you guys release an update for A11 that disables the SEP and passcode, assuming you can't solve it?
It's definitely in the cards. Yeah, it's definitely in the cards. Mm-hmm. But it's very difficult to actually make a judgment like that, because what are the secondary effects? Like maybe Apple will prevent us from even doing that somehow. I don't think it's easy for them to do so. They could make it a lot harder. Like they can't prevent us from avoiding the SEP altogether, but they can prevent us from doing it in a way that can be updated throughout iOS versions in an easy way. So like maybe we'd have to like write a ton of patches and every update would require a lot of work. And that's definitely suboptimal. I'm not sure we would release something in case we had to go down that path.
Okay. Yeah, there are a lot of repercussions there, because like you never know, someone could take CheckRain and use it to do like bad things to other people's devices.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, I guess, the case with SEP bugs. The issue is with SEP bugs, at least we do have the old ethical issue, but at least technically speaking, it's one of those, once you've done it, it just works. Mm-hmm. Things, hopefully. I mean, Apple might have, you know, an ace up their sleeve. I don't think they do, but TechRun being a free project that is not really, I guess, the main focus of people in the team. Like people in the team, they, most of them have a job, a day job, then that's their main focus. It's hard for us to maintain something if the maintenance requires a full set of custom patches every fucking time to disable the SEP only on this one specific device.
Yep.
And even then, it's a compromise and the experience we deliver with that is suboptimal. I think at some point we would not do so, or maybe we would do it once and show people how to do it, and then let people maintain it over time as a Pongo module while we keep providing the infrastructure around it. That might definitely be viable, but we have to think about the actual.
Yeah, because it's definitely like a trade off there. Because like, even if you do ship the exploit, I'm guessing you're just gonna like obfuscate the crap out of it so people can like steal it out of the checkrain and start using it.
Yeah, this entire situation, like, it's just for jailbreaks in general, as our strategy goes, like, I've thought about jailbreak policy strategies for a long while, but I've never thought about the implications of adding SEP stuff, and I don't think anyone in the team ever did so. It was just like SEP never impacted the jailbreak community, really, and except for downgrades, I guess, but now it's playing a major role. And yeah, a lot of considerations, we're still making them as we go, and we don't have a, you know, a playbook that we might have made for AP side of things in the past.
Okay. Question from Asvi: when will we get more public info about Pongo OS? The docs haven't been updated in months.
I mean, at this point, I guess the code is really the documentation, which is something really awful to say, but Pongo is a project that is hard to really document, other than providing examples. I try to write the code in a simple way that doesn't have too many crazy layers of abstractions. And if you have any questions, you can ask us directly. But yeah, hopefully we're going to come up with better documentation. I'm not sure if we've pushed already the latest Pongo source tree, because we've made a lot of improvements there. But ideally, the process of developing for Pongo should be close to making some random kernel extension for macOS, actually. And you do have some limitations, but you should have a full libc, and you should have the Pongo header to link against. And you have basically all of the APIs there. And what you're really going to need is mostly the task stuff and mostly device tree stuff to write drivers.
Back up here. Question from Graphiar: where is downgrading on the priority list? Siguza has mentioned that downgrading with blobs, regardless of SEP version, is possible. Do you guys plan on putting that in checkrain soon?
Yeah, I mean, again, we are definitely going to work on the infrastructure needed to pull that off. But me personally, I don't have a plan to work towards something like that within checkrain. And to my understanding, that's also the position of the team. Although, again, we will develop the infrastructure, and if anyone wants to actually maintain a project to do downgrading, they can get in touch with us to, you know, if they have any questions about Pongo, if they need any help, if they need if they don't know how to do a specific thing, like we can definitely help. I guess the hardest part is having something else to maintain, because the more complexity you add in, the more technical depth you have, the more unmanageable the entire thing becomes. And I think with checkrain, the model we have now is really nice, because we focus on providing infrastructure for checkrain as a jailbreak by itself, but then we open it up from Pongo onwards, so people can build on top of that, and hopefully a downgrade solution will come out of this fairly soon.
Okay. Right. That's fair enough. Yeah, because it is a balance. Because, like you said, adding complexity means you're adding more work to maintain, and it.
Yeah, and it's the real issue is, like, it's exponential. It's not the single increase in work you need to do one time, but exactly. Every time you need to do an update, you need to consider that, and it just keeps adding up and adding up and adding up. So building clear and flexible infrastructure is the play here, because with clear and flexible infrastructure, people can build on top of it. And you can just keep providing the guarantees that you give to the people that are building on top of it. And if Apple breaks something which is downgrade specific, it's one less thing that we have to consider. But hopefully what we provide to who develops the downgrade stuff is going to be solid enough that they won't need to do much unless Apple specifically targeted something that downgraders were using.
Okay. Question from Troy. Is the plan to open source Checkrain this year still on the table, or will that be later due to the SetBS?
I don't have a clear answer on that, actually. Actually, on one side of my mind, I'm thinking maybe this should actually speed up the process of open sourcing Checkrain, because the SEP stuff makes it a lot less likely for it to be abused. Mm-hmm. However, if we did that, we would keep the SEP stuff private still as a module. So everything in Checkrain but that module would be open source, basically.
Okay.
The other line of thought is to, yeah, sure, but first let's wait a bit to see what Apple does, just in case things change. But hopefully we will publish it by the end of the year. I'm still hoping on that.
Okay.
Still aiming for that, actually, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. Right. Yeah, because there is that kind of there is always that argument of like whether if you open source this, people could like take it and make like a malicious version of Checkrain.
Yeah, I mean, I think the argument is gone now with the SEP stuff.
Right. Yeah. Question from R5. What are the current roadblocks with the Checkrain Windows driver issues?
I think the latest I have on the Windows stuff is that it actually all works. The issue is that we never managed to figure out a way to actually ship it to users, like to bundle it all together. Because with the driver stuff, you have to remove your USB drivers. Mm-hmm. And so you will be left with a computer that doesn't have USB. that's really problematic. So it's kind of a deal breaker, I think, for having a shippable version that just works, which is what I guess we want to have. But technically, I mean, it's workable. It's just me personally, I don't have the knowledge on the Windows platform to pull it off, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so it's really up to other people and their schedules. I can control them, you know, so.
Okay.
Yeah, the Windows stuff, I'm very optimistic that with this SEP stuff, they will have motivation to look into trying to make a shippable version, but yeah, no promises there.
Okay. Question from BenFXMTH. Has anyone outside of Pangu team and Checkrain team managed to get the SEP vulnerability to work?
Publicly, I don't think so. Well, there was some guy that tweeted the, I think, accept JD decrypt. Privately, I think multiple people have done it. The attacks, there's multiple ways to pull it off, I think. And what we have is not that tricky, I guess, to get to. And I think it's very reasonable that multiple different parties are sitting on an exploit right now.
Okay. Right. Okay, question from iPixel Galaxy. Can you possibly boot macOS Big Sur on an iPad or even an iPhone with Checkrain at some point due to macOS adding ARM support?
The biggest issue with that, I say, is the fact that it's ARM 64E. So the Big Sur build has PAC. And the devices that Checkrain supports do not have PAC. However, PAC instructions are mostly NOPs on ARM64 devices. So it would be problematic to an extent, I guess, but it's not that big of a deal that it's not something you can work around. So it's plausible. It's definitely plausible. You might have some complications on the graphics driver side of things, but even then, like it's mostly going to be on the frame buffer side rather than the GPU side. Mm-hmm. So it's within the realm of possibility to do it. And I think it's a shorter term kind of project to actually pull it off than other things like PongoV, which could take a lot longer, potentially.
Okay. Right. Next question is from Christopher. All-time favorite iOS exploit.
Okay, so I still deep down really dearly love OS Unserialized Binary.
Mm-hmm.
That was, again, it was the first vulnerability that really caught my attention and made me think, hey, this is actually cool. However, some of the iOS 14 stuff that I had to pull off recently is really exciting. Not the vulnerability itself, but the exploit technique. I think it's really nice compared to what I used to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy about that one. But my first love is and will always be OS and serialized binary.
Next question is from Trifecta. He says, if I find a zero-day exploit and want to sell it, do you recommend selling it to trusted third parties like Zerodium or to Apple directly?
That really depends on your moral compass, on your even geographical location, on the bug itself. There's a multitude of things. However, I do recommend thinking it in depth. Like, you gotta think it through. You're talking about serious amounts of money, and the answer is not easy. Like, Apple sometimes will give you enough, and it will give you a peace of mind that might be nice. On the other hand, selling something to Apple might mean that you're potentially wasting a pretty good payout. And it's pretty good in the order of magnitude of being able to purchase a house. So you have to think it through, and you have to evaluate the legality aspect of it. Selling 0 day is legal, but there are some complications. Like, you must sell it only to trusted end users, I guess. And if you're within a Westerner country, you might have to require to get Westerner export licenses, which it's very tricky. I've done it. It took a lot of effort and a lot of legal paperwork, a lot of back and forth between a lot of different people. It was really complicated. It's doable, and for the money, I guess it's worth it. So maybe look into it. If you do want to have a chat in private about it, feel free to do so. I do have experience on both sides of the of this world, and I'm definitely willing to help another researcher out.
Is KPP still an issue now with jailbreaks? It used to be
not really. Lines, I mean,
but I haven't heard any.
My understanding is that the Yalu 102 KPP attack is still viable to an extent. You do have to change some stuff, but the general idea, I think, it's still viable. However, KPP was the first iteration of a general line of thought that Apple kept following. And then you have KTRR, XPRR, APRR, all that shit. Now you have PPL. In general, as an idea, I think it's a very powerful idea for Apple to follow. KPP as an implementation in specific, I think it's compromised. But yeah.
Right. Next question is from JTV. Will Checkroom be available for Apple TV 3?
That's a 32-bit device, so no.
Okay.
Don't have any plans on supporting those.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Question from Chakalaka Chob. Which open source exploit was the first one for you? I think they mean in terms of like learning.
That's a tricky one, I guess. Comics stuff was some stuff I'd look into. The very first would be Black Crane that I looked into specifically. When I was younger, someone came up with a custom version of the Black Crane exploit, and it was a fairly simple exploit overall, but that was actually what got me into programming in C. So I guess that could be defined as the first exploit I've actually looked into, just because I didn't know what code was before that. Or, I mean, I knew what code was before that, but I didn't know how to read C code or write C code.
How does the set mitigation work from Davis?
There's actually a patent about it, but the general idea is that all of the memory that SEP uses is encrypted, and what you're able to do is you can read the encrypted memory and you can write the encrypted memory, but you don't know what the memory actually means, or when you write something to it, you don't know exactly what to write, because you need to have valid encrypted bytes or else the SEP will crash. And what we're doing in order to attack this is what's called a replay attack. So what we do is we first get the SEP into some known state, and then we take a copy of the known state. Then we make the SEP keep going on and to another known state. And the second known state, the memory that we copied earlier, is going to be different. And what we can do is we can write the older version of memory back. So when the SEP goes and accesses that, it sees what it used to have, not what it actually should have now. And by doing that, we're able to get code execution. On A11 and later, Apple added a security measure that prevents replay attacks like this. And there is a patent that goes into detail on how this works. We've read the patent tons of times. On paper, sounds pretty good. In practice, there's still quite a few things that we are not sure about in their implementation. So we do still have quite a few avenues that we're still investigating, but nothing that at this point in time you can say, hey, we've actually popped it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Next question is from Yomaz Kenigit again. What do you think about Apple security bounty?
I have a lot of mixed thoughts about it. On one hand, I give a lot of feedback to Apple directly about it, and they've implemented a lot of my feedback, and I'm pretty grateful about that. On the other, I've been treated not well during my first experiences with it. It took years to get payments, and from Apple, I didn't expect such a treatment. On paper, I mean, it's nice. It's not that bad. There's places that will pay you more. And in general, there's a few concerns. You're not sure what you're going to get before you give it to Apple. Their prices, they can vary a lot. While on the open market, there's better ways of evaluating value, I guess, before committing to a transaction. So all in all, it's fine. As bug bounty program, it's fine, but you do have to consider the commercial implications of it. And yeah, I don't contribute to it as much as I imagined I would, given that.
Yeah. Because it's kind of like you feel like Apple, considering how much money they have, it should be a lot easier for them to pay out a lot more for an exploit.
Yeah, but it also puts them in an uncomfortable place because a lot of their employees, they make good money, but
they do the same thing where they don't get the exploit money.
And say you're an employee and you do you fix 20 different bugs during your year of work there. And maybe, it's Fang. It's a great place to work at. You make, anywhere. It's six figures, anywhere from the low six figures to the high six figures, maybe even more with bonuses, stocks, or not. It's great money, don't get me wrong. But once you do the math and once you know that what you have is actually valuable, if Apple paid $1 million for an O-Day, who would work for Apple?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And yeah, they have that limit. And also, what if I come up with 100 O-Days? That's $100 million. Will Apple be happy about paying $100 million to me? I mean, they have the money. Yeah, sure. But
there's a balance that needs to be reached.
Sorry?
So there kind of has to be like a balance kind of.
There has to be a balance. How do you explain to shareholders? Oh yeah, we just sent $100 million to this Italian dude. It's weird, and I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I do know that the private industry has more need, I guess, for vulnerabilities. They have an existential need for vulnerabilities. So fundamentally, even if Apple has deeper pockets, I think the private industry will always be able to outbid them.
Okay.
Because they have the motivation to.
Yeah, pretty much. That makes sense. Question from Computer Woman. What are your thoughts on the SRD and what would you like to see happen with that program? What is Security Research Device.
We thought it was vaporware for the longest while. Now, apparently it's not. I hoped for a lot more, but maybe this is just a starting point, and we'll see. Actually, I don't have a.
You think it's like a toe in the water kind of deal?
I think, yeah, they're probably going to give us SSH and that's about it, which is okay. I mean, it's fine. It's a starting point. It's, you know, at least something. Like Apple, it's crazy that we've come this far and Apple hasn't done it already. In my eyes, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like there is no justification for it other than being too attached to DRM, maybe, because the security advantages of researchers being able to actually look into the platforms are huge. As an attacker, my biggest fear is that there's going to be a lot more people like me out there trying to do the same thing and maybe reporting to Apple everything. Like that's obviously an existential threat, and I'm not sure why Apple doesn't try to push that further.
Okay. What do you think about the clause that like anything you find with that device has to be given to Apple?
I guess it's fine because this, like, in a way it's fine because they still like I can still do my own research on my own without using that device, and Pinky's word that I haven't used a device and sell it on my own, I guess. And if I do use a device, give it to Apple. It's better than if you're a member, you have to give everything to Apple, I guess. It's not ideal. Like, ideally, Apple would trust their own security and be like, yeah, try to hack this, but you won't. And just, like, you know, try to have faith that if someone does hack it, they will give it to them, because what they propose adds more value on the table than what everyone else can. And in a way, they can do that. And I think what they're doing now is great, but honestly, if I had to choose between doing my work stuff as I'm doing it now and having such a device, I'd keep doing my work stuff, obviously.
Okay.
But it's the right path, I think, and eventually I think they will realize that they're being dumb about it, and they will probably come around and have more faith in themselves as well as in the security researchers that they give these devices to. Because ideally, everyone could get these. Like, just the fact that you have to be a security researcher that they know about, I think that's kind of weird, because if you made something and you claim that what you're making is secure, you should have trust in yourself enough to give something that's slightly less secure to people that might demonstrate that it's not secure. But obviously, I don't think Apple is in a place right now where they can confidently go and say, hey, anyone, you could have this device and go try hack it, bet you won't. Because right now, memory corruption still does exist.
Yeah. From RA9, is it possible to get Blackbird working on A7 just for downgrade purposes?
No. No. To my understanding, Blackbird is not there on A7.
Okay. And
A7 final... actually, I think, is the most hardened SEPROM yet. We've tried to do a bunch of things that we can do on other devices. There's some bugs that we found specifically on, I think, A8, and that's not present actually at all in A7. Blackbird itself on A7, it's not present. So I'm not sure why, but A7 is actually pretty tough.
Okay. And final question from Mister. Seeing that 12.0 to 12.2 has received checkrain support with the release of 0.1.0, is it possible that after the major things you have in the works for checkrain are done, more previous versions of iOS could receive checkrain support, e.g.
Yeah,
iOS
11? Yeah, for sure. And we've actually already open sourced some of our KPF APIs. I've tried to even have someone else maybe try to write some patch finder for earlier versions. Ideally, what we want to have is a modular system where we can load multiple patch finders based on which versions are currently running.
Okay, I think we'll wrap it up there for this one. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to check out our website, talkboard.live, and our Patreon at patreon.com/talkboard. Thank you very much for joining us, and have a great week.